This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hello, welcome to the Michael K. Show. I hope you have a fun day today.
Well, we have to change that. It doesn't sound like that anymore. Good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Monday, January 11, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, and Peter Rosenberg with you. We're apart, but we're together for the next 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other 20 and a half, that's your responsibility. Why 3.5? Nick pregame show.
That's right.
Nick pregame show at 6:30, so we've got to jam this all into 3.5 hours. Peter has to be economical with ENN. It's a challenge. It really is, because today's a day. You could do a 7-hour show. You could do double the show. But we'll make it work. We'll entertain you.
You feel that strongly.
I do feel strongly about this show. I think it's an important show moving forward. A big wild card weekend. So a lot of stuff to dissect there. But we start off with the story that broke about an hour ago, maybe a little less, where Doug Peterson has been fired as the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. 3 years ago, he won the Super Bowl with the Eagles. He didn't make the playoffs his first year as a coach, and he made it every other year, every year since, except for this past year when they were ravaged by injuries and Carson Wentz forgot how to play football. And the only reason we start with this story today, as we said during the soft open, is this. You've got a situation where Joe Douglas was part of the front office staff when the Eagles won the Super Bowl. He reportedly is pretty close with Peterson, likes him a lot. They have a great relationship. Over the weekend, I was reading rumors that horrified me that the Jets were considering making a trade with the Eagles in order to acquire Doug Peterson. Now, smartly, they didn't do that, but now they don't have to do that because Doug Peterson has been fired. So he's a free agent. Anyone could hire him. So before we talk to Don and Peter about it, I'll give you my opinion right now. I'm not so sure that I'm that keen on the Jets just diving into the Peterson pool. Because to me, it has a lot of the Adam Gase stench to it. Now, Peterson's a better head coach, obviously a much more impressive resume. But what you're doing one more time is you're hiring a coach that was just fired. Usually when you're just fired, you need a year or two to think about it. Go back to being a coordinator or something like that. Think about what you did wrong. Why did you get fired? No, the Jets dove right into it with Gase when no one on their fan base wanted them to do it. Now, Peterson does have the Super Bowl victory on his resume, but again, this is a guy that was fired, and you're going to dive right back in and take somebody else's discard. The Jets should look at their job and say, this is a prime job. This should be one of the best jobs in football. This is one of the two New York jobs out of 32 in all of the National Football League, and we don't have to hire somebody else's reject. Now, I know that's harsh on Peterson. Peterson is looked at as a good coach, but is he looked at as a savant? Is he looked at as a Sean McVay? Is he looked at as that sort of guy? Don't the Jets deserve to get that sort of guy, their own guy that they build up? Doesn't this smell, Don, a lot like Rich Kotite? Now, yeah. Kotite didn't win a Super Bowl with the Eagles, but he had some success with them, and Leon Hess couldn't wait.
Yeah, that's a big difference, right? I mean, you could compare him to Gase, who went to the playoffs 1 year in Miami and then missed the playoffs the next 2 years, or Rich Kotite, who had some success with Philadelphia. This guy won a Super Bowl. I mean, that's a big deal. You can't just ignore that. And it wasn't like a Super Bowl like Mike McCarthy, which was like a decade ago, or going back to Dick Vermeil, which was 100 years ago. I mean, this is a guy, this is 2017, and doing it with a backup quarterback, and doing it with a backup left tackle, and shocking the world and winning that Super Bowl. And going to the playoffs the next 2 years. So it was a little bit of a different scenario than those guys. But I kind of hear you in the other sense of he follows up that 13-3 Super Bowl season with back-to-back 9-7 records in what is a very pedestrian division. And then the bottom completely dropping out, winning 4 games this past year. A relationship with the star quarterback going awry. You know, so there are some things that I think sends up a red flag. And also, you know, hiring him just because you have a relationship with him, is this the best possible hire? Just because you won a Super Bowl in 2017, of all the candidates that they've interviewed, and they've interviewed everybody, is this the best candidate among all the guys that they can hire? And I'm not sure he is.
I understand Michael's thought process of when you think Doug Peterson, do you think like savant? Do you think like, oh, this is this football mind that we absolutely need? No, you picture a sort of aging high school football coach and his visor, who's sort of a pep guys up sort of coach. But I don't know that that's fair. And the truth is, the expectations that have existed now for the Eagles since they won the Super Bowl, I'm curious to talk to Andrew about it. Were those expectations ever fair? Was this a team that's been loaded with talent over the last few years and he has disappointed? Or is this a guy who got a team to the Super Bowl that was good but maybe overachieved because of Doug Peterson? I think the story's very unclear, but Michael, I do understand being wary about the idea of taking away one of your divisional, maybe your number one divisional rival's trash.
Well, this it wouldn't be a divisional rival for the Jets, but
No, that's right, because we were talking about the Jets and not the Giants.
Right.
But still, taking over another team's, someone that they just immediately decided weren't good.
I wasn't there, so I can't really speak to it. Andrew follows it very, very closely. But there are strong voices within the game that say things completely became different with the Eagles when DeFilippo, the quarterback coach, and Wright, the offensive coordinator, left.
Right.
That those guys might have been the genius behind the greatness. Because remember, Carson Wentz was going to be the MVP before he got hurt. And then Nick Foles takes over, and they have an unimaginable magic carpet ride to the Super Bowl. So was it DeFilippo, or was it Frank Reich that made Doug Peterson, or did Doug Peterson make them? I mean, those are questions that have to be answered before you dive in.
And the thing is you can look at either side of it, right? That he won a Super Bowl and deserves a lot of credit for that. And then you could say, well, look at DeFilippo and look at Reich, although Reich didn't exactly have a great game on Saturday, but still, you know, that after losing them, things began to change. But you could also look at the fact that of all the teams in the NFC East, the only team that didn't technically lose their starting quarterback was Philadelphia. They were bad because their quarterback was bad, okay? Now, is that all the coach's problem? No. I mean, but still, it happens on his watch where a guy that would have won the MVP a few years ago is just became one of the worst quarterbacks in the league, you know, on his watch. An offense that went 26th in the league this past year. A division that was so winnable it was ridiculous, and it didn't happen, and they completely bottomed out. So you could see positives, you could see negatives. He deserves a lot of credit for winning those Super Bowls, but if you're going to go there, then I think he deserves a lot of blame for everything bottoming out pretty much since then. Back-to-back 9-7 records and going to the playoffs because of the division you're in, and then having it bottom out the way that it did. Do you, as a Jet fan, want to go with somebody that, in the best-case scenario, you're kind of on the fence about? There's a lot of unknowns about all of these potential coaches, but this is a guy on an NFL level that had some good, some bad. Does that make him the top hire? To me, it does not.
All right, now let's check in with Andrew, our great producer, who is from Philadelphia, loves the Eagles, follows them closely. Give me your first take when you heard, because I think I was the one that told you, because I saw it on Twitter first, that Peterson was fired, and do you look at him as an excellent coach?
My first reaction was that I felt bad for him, just because I do feel like a Super Bowl ring, two division titles, and three straight playoff appearances, I just feel like it should buy you one down year, for however down this year was. Something about that just doesn't sit right with me. As for the comparisons, you know, with the 2017 team, and if that was Frank Reich and DeFilippo, I'm sure those guys had huge parts in it. But remember, Peterson is the play caller for Philadelphia. Reich is not the play caller, and Peterson, he gets knocked for it. But his aggressiveness in play calling, I think, has won the Eagles a lot more games than it's lost them. So I thought he was a great coach. You know, he's in games against Sean McVay, I think he's 2-1. Games against Kyle Shanahan, I think he's undefeated. You know, some coaches who came in around the same time as him. So he's had big success against other elite coaches. Obviously, he's been great against Belichick. He beat the Patriots in a Super Bowl, all with offense, and he's an offensive mind. So I think it's tough. I feel bad for him. I do understand why he was fired. They've regressed each year since the Super Bowl. I think they thought they were entering a long period of success, like the Saints, the Packers, teams like that in the NFC, and clearly that's not the case. So I get it. But I would have thought one. I would have thought he'd have one chance to make up for what happened this year, and clearly they disagreed.
Would the Jets be smart to hire him, in your opinion?
Yes, I think they would. I do. I guess I was going to say if Darnold's still the quarterback, then you know I think Peterson has had success with different quarterbacks on this team. I know his relationship with Wentz has gone horribly wrong, but he did build Wentz up into a guy who was going to win MVP in his second year in the league. You know, he obviously had huge success with Foles, and then I think we even started to see success with Jalen Hurts at the end of this season. So you know, that's a lot of different quarterbacks, a lot of different styles, and he's had certain measures of success with all of them. So I think that's encouraging. And I know we can say what we want about what happened last week, if he lost the team. I've never heard that Peterson has had any kind of bad relationship with the locker room with the exception of Wentz. Now, that's big. That's the quarterback. Yeah. But it seems like his players always liked him. They had some bad teams going into Decembers when they could have given up on him as their coach, and they rallied in 18 and 19. They made the playoffs. They won a division. So I don't know. I think I think they would do well to hire him as coach.
I'm with Andrew that you would think that that Super Bowl and three straight playoff appearances would buy you another year after going 4-11-1.
Mm-hmm.
But when Andrew says that they digressed pretty much every year since the Super Bowl, if they did him the favor and gave him the gold watch and gave him another year, do you feel like he would have done anything with that year? Or would they have just, I think they'd be better than a four-win team, but would he have bought an extra year and eventually gotten fired anyway?
I think he probably would have, but I don't know. Again, I think Howie Roseman, their GM, is more to blame because I think their roster is a disaster. So next year probably wasn't going to be good no matter what, if it's Peterson coaching or whoever the next guy is. But it's funny because, you know, obviously the Super Bowl season is where, you know, he made his name, but there are people who cover the team that thought his best coaching job was last season when they were down to numerous practice squad players at receiver. They were 5-7 headed into December, and they came back and won four straight to win the division. So, you know, he wasn't just like a one-year wonder as a coach, which I think is kind of how he's been labeled. I think that's a little bit unfair.
Well, it's going to be fascinating because, as Don said earlier, the Jets are hiring, they're interviewing everybody and everybody's mom. I mean, they are doing due diligence, casting a wide net. But does that narrow right now that Doug Peterson's available? Does Doug Peterson automatically go to the front of the line? And you know, Don, you've been with me almost 20 years. I'm not a big fan of making decisions because of the loudness of the fan base. But you do have to consider this hire for the Jets if you are going to make the fan base happy. They were right by being unhappy about Gase. And I don't think they would be ultimately thrilled with Peterson. Now, if you think that he's the guy, then you know what? Then you have to turn off the noise. But if you've got other people that are also right at that level and you're going to take Peterson just because he won a Super Bowl, I think that you almost have to cater a little bit to your fan base and listen to what they say. And we have to take the pulse too. So give us a buzz right now, 1-800-919-3776, whether or not you would be happy with this guy. I don't know about you and Peter, Don, but I feel that this really complicates this entire thing for the Jets. Really makes it difficult.
But is it possible, and I mentioned this in the soft open, and if you missed it, that's why you got to tune in at 2:55, but I'll repeat it for you.
There you go.
Is this already a done deal? Because if you believe, and I think you do, that he was under orders to pull Hurts in the fourth quarter of that game last Sunday, he was told what to do, and he was on shaky ground, and he probably figured, I really can't get in their face about this because they could fire me at any moment. That we believe that that's what happened, right? He didn't act rogue. I think he was under orders. If he was under orders, Michael, then he walks into that same room where on that Sunday, he didn't have the courage to say, no, I'm not doing it. I'm going to coach this game to win. I don't care what you say. If you want to fire me, fire me. He doesn't do that. He caves. He pulls the quarterback. They lose the game. And then all of a sudden he finds religion and goes into the room and says, I don't like being told what to do. Unless he went in there and said that because he knows that he's got a job waiting for him if Philadelphia didn't give him what he wanted. And if you're going to continue to tell me what to do, then fire me, knowing that his buddy in New York would hire him. Because if he was told what to do, Michael, and I believe he was, why didn't he stand up in the fourth quarter of that game on Sunday?
It's weird. It's weird because he ruined his, he didn't ruin it, but he certainly tainted his reputation.
Because, and listen, myself included, although I said if it wasn't his decision, I feel bad for him. But yeah, he was the face of that mistake. You know, read Twitter, read people that are in the business who felt like he dropped the ball. He did an awful job. But you could understand that if it means you get to keep your job as of head coach of one of the more popular teams in the league and a team that, you know, he won a Super Bowl with. And then in the meeting after the season is over, he gets confrontational. I don't like to be told what to do. Where was that in the fourth quarter on Sunday?
Well, maybe it's as simple as when that conversation comes up, he expresses dismay of how it played out, and it went from there.
But wait a minute, Peter. He does it because he's afraid he's going to lose his job
mm-hmm.
last week. But now he's not afraid to lose his job? You have to know if you get in their face about it that there's a good possibility they can say, sorry, but this is how we do business, you're out of here.
But sometimes things go left.
Right, and they do. But I'm wondering, was the positive byproduct of it going left knowing that there'd be a job waiting for him when he got let go?
You know what that smells like, Don? It smells like what happened with Doug Marrone. Doug Marrone had a job with the Bills. Could have stayed there a long time. They wanted him to stay there. He had an out because they changed owners. And he exercised the out. Why would you ever leave one of the 32 jobs in the NFL? He left because he was told that he was going to get the Jet job until Manish Mehta completely undermined him, and the Jets bought into what was in the Daily News, so he didn't get the job. That's what this smells like, if in fact this is the case, because why would you just submissively go, okay, I'll take Jalen Hurts out in a game that really means something, and then all of a sudden find religion?
Not just do it, Michael, but own it after the game.
Right.
Like, you do that when you realize the benefit is I get to keep my job. So he pulls that move out, which I thought was embarrassing. A lot of people fight me on it. I'm sure I'll fight all my rest of my life on Twitter about it. But it's how I feel, that he embarrassed himself. And then you turn around a week later and walk into the room, and now you got all this bravado about I don't like being told what to do.
Well, you know what? We'll ask him when he gets hired, and obviously we'll have him on the show, and then hopefully we'll get him. He'll be gutty enough to have a weekly with us, unlike Adam Gase. I heard his weekly in Philadelphia was very good. Got very contentious at times.
Well, I don't mind contentious. As long as you call in. I ask is you call in on time and you stay on during the interview. And
a clean line, you mean.
Well, yeah, well, that's important. You got to call in, all right, on time, have a clean line, all right? And if you are going to hang up on us, do it in a blaze of glory so we get something out of it.
That's a fair point.
Otherwise, what's unfair about hanging up, though, Peter? Now, you don't have the slam aspect of it anymore. You just hit a button. I mean, in the old days, you used to slam the phone down. It used to resonate. You didn't do that. That doesn't have that anymore.
I know. Well, because a lot of times what would happen is before they would catch the, what was the thing called that you push to go to the other line or hang up?
Oh,
it's a great question.
What is that called?
Because it was the
it's everything.
It's called that thing.
That thing. Like Lauryn Hill said, if what would happen was you go to slam the phone down, you hit the little phone holder, you hit the side of the phone, and then you eventually roughly click it. So you get so much noise. Now it's just beep.
Well,
not the same.
Back in the day, when you hung up on someone, they knew that they were hung up on. Now, when they hang up on, we lost them.
Are you there?
To a bad area. They could call. You have no idea. That would be a great app, guys, of having some kind of button, some kind of app on your phone that when you hang up, it makes some sort of a noise to let the world know I'm hanging up on you. Instead, we just accidentally got disconnected.
And well said.
We can't have this conversation without checking in first.
Okay.
With Ira and Stan.
Well, he was on hold before the show started. So
is that true?
That.
Yeah. He shot out of a cannon, Ira.
How does he do it?
Well, he dialed in during the soft open.
That's why you got to listen to the soft open.
Soft open is hard. It really is. It's big.
It's so weird. It's true.
Excuse me?
You heard me.
The soft open, you know what the soft open is? It's that hard chocolate that once you pierce through it, it's got the...
Cadbury.
Or if you want to just go with the covering of ice cream.
God, I love a Cadbury.
It's soft, but there's that hard cover.
Of course. Here's Ira
the hard cover
in Staten Island. Ira, what do you think?
Oh, well, Michael, I'm locked into you guys at 255. I always hear the soft
Thank
open.
You. Thank
but,
you.
But you know, it's amazing. You know, first of all, Michael, you're so right. This smells so much like the Doug Marrone situation. And I wouldn't be surprised if this thing is orchestrated the way Don just said. Now, in all fairness, Peterson did accomplish something. He won a Super Bowl. He went to the playoffs a couple of times. The thing that throws up a red flag is, number one, it does remind you of an Adam Gase situation, even though he's had more success because the guy just lost his job. And guess what? You know, he's going to get handed a job within a week or two if the Jets hire him. But the bottom line here is, I want somebody fresh. You know, I don't want somebody that failed somewhere else where he had some quarterback issues, whether it was personnel, like Andrew said, whether, you know, Wentz started having bad relationship with Peterson. I can't have a questionable head coach that just had a quarterback issue, and I'm going to bring him in here. He either groom my second pick with a quarterback, or I'm going to bring Sam back and let him try to rebuild Sam. I just can't do that. I just think it would be the best decision for Joe Douglas and the Jets to make is whoever else they're interviewing, Brian Daboll's of the world, Aaron Glenn's, all these other guys, just go with one of these guys if you feel they're a CEO type of guy. Doug Peterson reminds me of a head coach that's going to be a play caller on the offensive side of the ball, and he's going to leave everything else up to his defensive coordinator, and I don't want that. I want somebody who's going to have his fingerprints on all three phases of the game, and that's the type of guy they have to hire. So for me, guys, you know what? I wish Peterson luck, but I think I would pass on him.
All right, strong stuff. Thank you, Ira. So Ira doesn't want him, but there are other people here that do. Let's go to Doc in Stratford. Doc.
Good afternoon, fellas. Yes, I definitely disagree. I think he'd be a good hire. I mean, he has the experience. He is, you know, he won the Super Bowl. Good record with the Eagles. Not sure what, you know, he was doing before that. But I think he's the guy. Who else is out there that, you know, with a good record that's going to, you know, do the job for the Jets?
Well, but you can't look at it like that. There are a lot of people out there. You have to uncover them. You have to find them. There are a lot of people that a lot of football teams desire. I mean, they've interviewed some really, really fine people. Now, do they translate into being good head coaches? I don't know. But you don't hire this guy because there's nobody else out there that's won a Super Bowl. You know, Barry Switzer won a Super Bowl, too. You want to hire him?
Look no further than Mike McCarthy. Now, Mike McCarthy was out of the game for a little while, but I was all for the hiring of Mike McCarthy. 8 years in the playoffs and 13 seasons in Green Bay, won a Super Bowl. He's a disaster in Dallas. An absolute disaster. But I do get what the caller's saying, though, that when you kind of have a working knowledge, the guy's had success on the NFL level, and everybody else, when you bring in an assistant, when you bring in somebody from college, there's going to be that unknown. So there is something to having a known commodity. Can he coach in the NFL? Well, sure he can coach in the NFL. He won a Super Bowl. But I think Ira's point's the best one is that this is an offensive guy, which kind of reminds me of Gase. Remember, he had Schwartz as his defensive coordinator, a former head coach in the league. Marty Morningweg was also on his staff, a former head coach, which tells you that if you do hire him, you're probably going to have to get a legit defensive coordinator in here. You know, you're probably going to have to make sure that you have people on the staff that can take care of some of the things. He's an offensive guy, period. So that's very similar to Gase, except he's had more success as Gase, but he's someone, is he going to focus on the defense? What is he? Is he a great game manager? Is it just he's a good offensive guy, and that's all he has on his resume?
All right, let's towel off. Big, strong open here on the show. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Big football weekend with the Super Wild Card. We have a big game tonight. I'm actually looking forward to this. I know every Jet fan is going to be glued to the television to see Alabama against Ohio State just to watch Justin Fields. Can he back up the performance that he had against Clemson against Alabama? I think this is going to be a high-scoring game. These are two explosive offenses, and college football is no longer a defensive sport. It's just not. It's just not.
What
I mean,
the
Ryan
end?
Day, the Ohio State head coach, said in an interview the other day, you know, we feel like if we stop somebody and hold them to a field goal, that we stop them. That's what college football is now.
Yeah, what is the over-under? I got to look at that.
That's 106.
106. I think that's a little bit much. No, it's not. I think it's in the 70s.
I mean, because I got it wrong. I bet the under in the Washington football team Tampa game, and I lost.
All right, we'll take a brief timeout. Take more of your phone calls. 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay LaGreca Rosenberg and you on a big Monday right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
For listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so there's a lot of stories in football. Another one is that Deshaun Watson looks like he might be up to be traded. So Adam Schefter was on with Greeny, he was asked by Greeny who can trade for Deshaun Watson.
There's no team that's better positioned in terms of salary cap space and draft picks, being that the Dolphins have the Texans' first-round draft pick, the third overall pick, to get the deal done. It would not be Tua for Deshaun Watson. And again, I'm sure Nick Caserio, the new Texas general manager, is hearing about a star quarterback being traded to Miami and thinking, I'm not doing that. And he's not thinking like that today. But what happens when if Deshaun Watson doesn't show up to the offseason program? What happens if he doesn't show up this summer? What happens if he tells them he's not going to play for them? What happens then? What do you do? Right? So they're going to have to feel this out. And if you wanted to investigate the market for Deshaun Watson, you basically could find probably 25 teams in the NFL that would be willing to trade for him today.
All right, so in terms of the market, Mike Tannenbaum was asked on the Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin show, what would it take, what would he trade for Deshaun Watson?
If I'm Houston, I do whatever it takes not to make this trade. I do everything I can within reason to repair the relationship. He's too good of a player. He has great character. He's a great leader. So I do everything I can. If I'm on the other side of that, what I do is I offer what I can to make sure that I get this player. And I would start with the Jets, kind of like all the teams you guys reeled off, Jets, Miami, any team that may need a quarterback. Besides Trevor Lawrence, this would be the guy that would be the next quarterback taken in this draft. He's been productive. There's no projection. There's no question marks. And I would give up multiple first-round picks to acquire this player.
There you have it. So the Jets have to get a coach first, and then that coach has to decide whether or not he likes Darnold or Fields, or whether or not the Jets should go all in on Deshaun Watson, if, in fact, Watson's available. But certainly is something to monitor.
I would definitely give up the first round this year and next year.
Would you give up the Seattle first round, which got better when Seattle got knocked out? I think it can't be worse than 22.
Yeah, 23, I think. That's not too bad. That's not too bad. I don't know if I give up all three of them, but I think about it.
I would think about it, too. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Rulez in Woodbridge. Rulez.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. I just want to give Don a shout-out towards the end of last year. He did a great job manning the station solo. We had a conversation about the Giants. But in terms of Doug Peterson, I think every coach is entitled to a bad year, albeit the Eagles' year was horrible. And it had everything to do with personnel. I think he's a great coach. I just think it was a little premature on him getting fired. But if I were the Jets, I would seriously consider him as a hire. I mean, he did a great job with the Eagles franchise. When he came in, I think the franchise wasn't doing too well. And he was really creative with the play calling and personnel, and he turned the team around. I think personnel, it doesn't matter how well of a coach you are, if you don't have the right pieces around you, you're just not going to produce, unfortunately. So, you know. I think he just should have been afforded a better opportunity.
Now, being fired doesn't necessarily mean that you're a bad coach. Dan Grosser points out in a tweet that Andy Reid's last 2 years in Philly, he was 8-8 and 4-12. He did not take a year off, went to the Chiefs, has had 8 straight winning seasons, and 3 wins away from back-to-back Lombardi trophies. So the Jets or any other team that would hire Doug Peterson would look like they would love that second act.
That you cannot tell me that it would be the worst thing in the world if they hired him. I mean, there's enough good there. The guy won a Super Bowl just a couple of years ago, did it under circumstances that have almost never been done before, right? Where you lose a backup quarterback and a backup left tackle. That's supposed to be death. Those are the two most important positions on the field, and he lost two of them and made a run and won the Super Bowl. It's unbelievable. We can't forget that. You know, But he showed you that he can work under those kind of circumstances, and then it kind of fell apart. So there's negatives, there's positive, but that's a pretty big positive you can't ignore. He won a Super Bowl 3 years ago. No Eagle head coach had ever won a Super Bowl. He did it. Andy Reid never did it. Dick Vermeil never did it, right? Buddy Ryan never did it. He did it. That's a pretty big nugget, isn't it, Peter?
And who's going to be out there with that credential available?
Right.
Nobody.
Nobody. Now, that, again, that's not the end-all, be-all. And, again, I'd be hesitant to do it. But nobody can sit there and get on hold and say, this is a disaster. It's the worst hire ever. When you have a Super Bowl on your resume, like a breath ago.
Let's go to Andrew in Franklin Square. Andrew.
Hey, fellas. Thanks for making the call.
You got it. So, thanks for making it.
It's funny. I've been listening to you guys, and, as a Jets fan, I'm really not against the idea of Peterson, because if you think about it, we've gone down the rabbit hole with all these former coordinators and guys that only stuck to one side of the ball and couldn't get it right. And, I kind of want a coach that has been a coach before, that has the experience of being a head coach. Like Steve Cohen said, I'm not paying somebody, to learn on my dime. And when I look at the candidates that are out there, the Bieniemies of the world and Arthur Smith, while they're all established coordinators, they too, who's going to necessarily be their coordinator? And as far as Doug goes, last year, at the end of the season, he came out and said that he told all his coaches and his coaching staff that they'd all be back, they'd be intact. And yet the next day, after he had a meeting with Jeff Lurie, he kind of had to go back and kind of say, well, no, we're going to make some coaching changes. So I kind of wonder if it was more Jeff Lurie wanting to make coaching changes behind the scenes and Doug saying, no, I'm the head coach, I'm going to do it my way or I'm out. I wonder if that was more of a falling out than it was actually Doug not being a head coach. Because to your point, he's the only coach in Philly that ever won a Super Bowl. And as a Jets fan, I would settle for a guy even like Marvin Lewis, who got a Cincinnati Bengals team to the playoffs every year. Yeah, they didn't win, but guess what? They did better than we've been.
But by your logic, and again, the Jets do not have a great history of hiring coaches. Obviously, you'd have to go back to Weeb Eubank the last time they won a championship. But you'd have to really go back to Bill Parcells the last time it's worked. In recent history, guys, their success has come from coordinators, not guys that have been head coaches before, right? I mean, Todd Bowles was only a head coach on an interim basis, but he didn't work out. How did it work out with Adam Gase having the experience, having gone to the playoffs? But how did it work with Herm Edwards? That first year with Eric Mangini, you went to the playoffs. So, you look at the recent resume, the assistant coach, non-head coaching experience, it's kind of worked for the Jets more than I think the experienced guy has since Bill Parcells, right?
They've done okay. Rex brings him the two AFC championship games, right, as you mentioned. So, yeah.
As an assistant.
Yeah.
So that wasn't somebody that had head coaching experience, and they had a tremendous amount of success with him. Herm, they had some success with him, was not a former head coach. So just because you've been a head coach, and look at the guys. All right, Andy Reid's obviously the exception, but look at the guys that are all in the playoffs before. A lot of them are head coaches for the first time, right?
Absolutely. You've got to get a chance sometime. Bill Parcells never had coach before he got the Giant coach, so you want to find that guy. Now, Jeff Lurie, the owner of the Eagles, according to the story on ESPN.com, was not sold on Peterson's plans regarding his coaching staff, according to sources. Peterson pushed for passing game coordinator, quarterbacks coach Press Taylor to be elevated to offensive coordinator rather than bringing in a more established candidate. The issue of how to fill the void left by defensive coordinator Jim Schwartz, who plans to take the year off from football in 2021, also was unresolved. If you're a coach, it's got to anger you just a little bit that an owner is going to tell you who to hire as a defensive coordinator, which would lead you to believe that Howie Roseman, the GM, is the power broker in this triumph.
Yeah, of course. But also bad job, I think, out of Peterson not reading the tea leaves. Because this is a guy that took a bullet for the organization. Because he felt, and even if you believed it was his decision to lose that game against Washington, you do that because you think you're coming back. So was he not paying attention? Was he completely sandbagged today when he had the meeting? Doesn't sound like he kind of knew what was coming, did he?
Yeah, but
why
would
you do that?
The one thing that changes, though, is that since that loss, it's come out that Wentz feels that the relationship is fractured and was going to ask for a trade. Now,
but that didn't that come out before the game, guys?
Well, there were some rumors about it, but now it probably got stronger where they did tell ownership, I want out. And You have the extension that you gave this guy kicks in next year. Hasn't even kicked in yet. So if you got rid of this guy, it would be anywhere from $40 to $50 million against this year's cap. Maybe Lurie said, I have too much invested in Wentz to stay with this guy. I'm going to bring in another coach.
But
it looks like it was a mutual parting of the ways. Peterson didn't want to be told what to do, and Lurie didn't want to lose his quarterback.
But all I'm saying is that when he's on that sideline in week 17, he had to see some of this coming. Right? He had to see there was a possibility he was going to be out. The rumors were already out before that game that Wentz wanted to get traded. I mean, did he not have a conversation with Roseman beforehand about what was going to happen with his assistants? He knew Schwartz was going to retire.
So maybe he just knew all of this wasn't going to go against the plan that they wanted to execute because he's a company guy and is going to do his job in spite of how it looks. And then he showed up to their meeting and was like, this is not good.
Let's take a brief timeout. More of your phone calls. We're going to take a closer look at the weekend, Super Wild Card Weekend. And it was very much that. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
All right, so it was in a word, troubling. In fact, the last couple of weeks for the three of us have not been great.
No.
It hasn't
I'm
been.
Proud. I'm proud of my picks.
Okay, but they didn't. You lost two out of three, just like Peter and I did.
Oh, but there was only one person that was embarrassed yesterday. Peter and I did. We lost on a hook, right? The hook beat us for our 1 point play, and everybody in the nation had, including you, had Buffalo. I feel no shame in that. They had control of the game.
Now, why was I embarrassed? Because I had the Steelers?
That's right.
Everybody in the world had the Steelers.
Well, listen, I know.
If you didn't pick against them, it would be embarrassing if you had the Browns.
A lot of people were embarrassed.
Well, I wasn't embarrassed at my Rams pick. I think it was a beautiful pick.
That was a gorgeous pick.
Hold on. Michael, you have to be honest. This is the problem with this country. You have to be honest on both sides. Your Rams pick was beautiful.
Gorgeous.
You nailed it.
Right.
Your Pittsburgh pick was horrid. Right. It doesn't matter how many people picked it. It was horrid.
That's all I'm saying. I think there was no chance
to cover. Right. From the second it started.
There was only one embarrassing pick, and that was the Steelers. You don't have to own that. There's a lot of people that pick the Steelers.
R.J. Bell did.
From what I hear, when I was in the living room watching the spot. But
how about Incarcerated Bob? 3-0.
3-0. Gorgeous.
Well, and how about if you want to go heads up on those two guys right now?
Oh, boy.
R.J. Bell's 9-9. Incarcerated Bob's 11-6.
Yeah, he's really doing well. But listen, I was completely engaged in that game on Sunday night, not just for a myriad of reasons, but the biggest one was that I thought that was really compelling. You know, you got a quarterback that's barely in the league against one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and they were hanging.
Saturday night.
What's shocking about that, when you talk about getting things wrong, and I got it wrong all over the place having the under, was how poorly Washington played defensively.
Yeah.
Because I did not see that coming. Because they were playing at such a high level, I didn't expect them to win the game, but I thought they'd hang because I thought the defense would make it a low-scoring game. And the fact that Washington scored as many points as they did, that loss is on Jack Del Rio and the Washington defense.
And
that's what's shocking.
I'm so let down by the game Del Rio called. It was, they never got close to getting to Brady, and Don, they just let off the blitz. The times when they would choose to blitz, it would be first down, and they'd get burned for a touchdown. Then you get to 3rd and 6, and they don't bring anyone. I did not understand. They tried to get cute, and it wasn't time to get cute. And, I mean, listen, the Taylor Heinicke thing was... I mean, guys, how do you not give him a look next year?
Well, it's amazing, too. I mean, it shows you about the talent evaluators. This guy didn't start in the XFL. But I got to be honest, you guys are talking about Del Rio doing a bad job. The quarterback was Tom Brady. The guy's great.
I understand.
He had answers to everything that they did, and you think that when you have Tom Brady as your quarterback, probably the primary thing that's on the mind of Bruce Arians is protecting him. So they had Max protect. They were able to do everything they wanted to do. They've got great skill position players. And I'll tell you another thing. I mean, Godwin must have dropped 5 balls. They should have beaten him worse.
I know. Well, but
so Washington drops too, by the way.
Not just Peter, But there were people, and we're going to talk to one of them coming up, Steve Young, later on, is that this was the defense that Tom Brady feared more than probably any other defense in the league right now. The way they were playing, the way they were putting pressure on the quarterback. And to Peter's point, there was a lack of creativity because the one thing Washington's not great at on the defensive side is their secondary. But because they get so much pressure, and they just didn't do a great job of it. And I think you just got to be a little bit more creative in finding ways to do it. I understand it's Tom Brady, but let's not make this Tampa Bay team out to be just unstoppable. This was the defense. Because I'm telling you, I don't think Tampa's winning the Super Bowl, all right? So somebody's going to figure them out. And I thought Washington would have done a better job. Again, not enough to win the game. But you got to be kicking yourself for 23 points and not winning the game.
But that's the point. If you had said to me they're going to score 23, I'd go, they got a good shot. They could win. And then listen, they were in it. They had the ball down 8 at the end of the game. So how upset could I really be? It was a good effort, but I was disappointed with the defense.
Now, were you disappointed in me? I think that I've really evolved and matured. I did not text you afterward.
No.
I did not taunt you. I knew that you were probably upset.
Well,
so I've grown.
You would have been a really bad guy because I was texting you during the game and you were ignoring me. So if you didn't respond to me as I'm making conversation,
I didn't.
And
get
then
any,
at the end of the game,
in a group text, I didn't see.
Yeah.
Nobody answered.
No one did. No, everyone blew me off during my own game. It was really sad. And I just asked the group. I just said, I said, have Daniel Jones or Sam Darnold ever looked as good as Taylor Heinicke does right now?
I think you were getting a little kooky.
A little giddy.
So you think Sam has been that good before?
Yeah, there have been times that he's been that good. Yeah.
Well, you know, it wasn't the great. It surprised us because we didn't even know how to pronounce his name before the game started. You know, but it was
a big spot, right, against a good defense in which he was, with the exception of one pass, basically incredibly accurate, ran the ball well, was poised, didn't make. And I'm not trying to say it. I don't even know if Taylor Heinicke starts in this league. I was just making an indictment of what a young, inexperienced quarterback is capable of doing that we have not seen here yet, unfortunately.
Although Ron Rivera said I think he said it yesterday. You know, number one job for us is our quarterback. We have to get a quarterback. So he is not the quarterback of the future for the football team.
But I think you have to let him compete.
I don't think he's going to even compete. They're going to bring in a quarterback.
How do you
Alex Smith? Alex Smith is a free agent. There's a reason. I mean, everybody has one of those moments. There's a reason why he hasn't started forever. He didn't. Again, he didn't start in the XFL. So yeah, he was really good on Saturday, but that doesn't mean he's going to compete for the starting job.
We can't get crazy off of one game. But what it kind of tells me, and this is, and I'm not doing this to infuriate Peter because I think he's in lockstep with me, is how beatable Tampa was on Saturday night.
No, they were beatable,
and you got the effort offensively that should have been enough considering how Washington played defensively down the stretch. I understand it's Tom Brady, but we've seen Tom Brady. What affects Tom Brady is pressure. And they
brought no pressure.
There is a chance. It's Brady against Breeze. There's a chance that Brady could go into the Superdome and win. Because I don't think the Saints were that impressive yesterday.
I don't think so.
I mean, the Bears managed that game with Matt Nagy. They would not let their quarterback lose a game for them. Well, if you're not gonna try anything, and your quarterback's not gonna lose the game, then he can't win the game for you either. Did they expect their defense to score all the points? They never let their quarterback have a chance to win the game. Either you got to try or not. If I'm Nagy, I'm sick to my stomach. I never had an opportunity to win that game yesterday. I didn't give myself a chance.
See, so much talk about a 9-7 team going to playoffs, or let's face it, if the Giants had gotten in at 6-10. The team that looked like they did not belong this weekend was Chicago.
And Pittsburgh.
Well, we know what. Listen, Pittsburgh, they did a lot to that. They played poorly. But I think Chicago is just an average football team. Right now, I think Washington's better than Chicago.
I think they're better than Pittsburgh.
No.
Pittsburgh's not good, guys. They're not good. They haven't been good in the whole half of the season, they weren't good yesterday.
No, they were awful, and there's an issue at quarterback for sure, and I think the Roethlisberger era is over and all that stuff. And Tomlin coached an awful game.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, respect. How was the show?
And the guy that I think is a terrific head coach looked like he was completely lost. But The fact that they were down 28-0 and at least had moments where you thought they could still find a way to win the game, I mean, give them credit for that, right?
And I also have to blame Tomlin because the Steelers were not ready at the beginning of the game. At 28-0, I did text Peter and go, I feel good about my pick because I had the Steelers giving 7.5. They were not competitive. And you can look at Roethlisberger with over 500 yards. They have no running game. The only way they could gain any ground is to actually throw the ball.
But just how fugazi the 11-0 was. And I bought into it because of the fact that they were, you know, with the COVID situation and they just looked like they were spent, right? But the thing that I kind of bought into, and I didn't pick this game, but I probably would have picked Pittsburgh if I had to, Michael, if we had to take, like, all the games. Because remember, they played Cleveland in Pittsburgh early and destroyed them.
Right.
Right?
And then they played them in the last week.
And they played them in Week 17 without their starters and almost won the game. Right? And I mentioned this on Friday, and it ended up being wrong, but when they had to, they had that big come-from-behind win against Indianapolis to win the division. So you kind of knew Pittsburgh had it in them that when they absolutely had to with their backs against the wall, what was it, they down like 17-0 against the Colts. They came back, they won the game to win the division and get that game in their own building. There wasn't anybody in the world, even people that picked Cleveland, that could have thought it would be 28-0 in the second quarter. No way.
But here's my question.
The first play of the game, a snap over the head of Rod. I mean, it was unbelievable. Right. It was like you're watching this thing unfold in slow motion.
But you guys may remember several things. One, I talked trash to Danny and said I don't think Pittsburgh's good, and I liked Cleveland in this game. At some point, regardless of all the things they may have done and they've shown you what they can be, we played a playoff game this past weekend. They were unprepared and in the first quarter got blown out of the building. Yes, they made it interesting for a while. Cleveland went cold, and when it got cut to 12, it was pretty interesting there. But in the end, the score still tells the story.
I know, but
they got blown out at home by Cleveland. Whether that's mistakes, so snap over that, they stink. That's not the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And explain to me, and it frustrates me, like as somebody that, you know, when you got a pick in the game or your favorite team's playing, right? And you stop them on a fourth down, on a third down, that feeling of when the punter comes out, you're like, oh, we survived. We're going to get the ball back. Mm-hmm. And that feeling's gone now because everybody's going for it on fourth down. You could be your own 20, they're going for it on fourth down.
Yeah, that's
how's Tomlin not going for it on fourth down?
For Mike Vrabel.
Then all of a sudden this weekend comes and like coaches that I respect, it's like, what are you doing? Like, and we could agree, I guess it's somewhat debatable, but like Frank Reich, you lose 3 yards on third down at the goal line and you go for it, kick the field goal.
Yeah, how about just eschewing the
road?
It's amazing. The coaching and the officiating was deplorable. It was deplorable all weekend.
It really was.
Even the replay guys got it wrong. It was bad. Now the game that, you know, kind of killed me was the 2-pointer that Don and Peter had, Ravens and the Titans.
Great game.
And it's amazing to me too. I guess we're part of the narrative. So you got a quarterback who's lost 2 playoff games, and the narrative is he can't win the big game. He's lost 2 playoff games, and he's the reigning MVP, and we were all saying, well, he can't win the big game. Oh, I thought he played pretty well.
He did.
And the Titans played awful. Awful. I mean, the Baltimore Ravens completely stopped one of the biggest weapons in all of the NFL. A guy who gained 2,000 yards had 40 yards. They can't win. All of a sudden, Ryan Tannehill's not that great unless you get big chunks of yardage from your backfield. He's not that great then. Everything kind of works together.
Well, that they dared him to beat him, right?
We're
not going to let Henry beat us, and Tomlin didn't. And there's is showing the 49-yard touchdown run by Jags was just unbelievable.
He's so fast, and you can see he gets the top speed right away.
Yeah, there was a point where you just knew he was making he was gone.
Oh yeah,
and that just frustrates a defense too, because I mean, it I don't want to say he's unstoppable, but you can't prepare for some of this. And then, they're showing the replay when he ices the game and knows to get down on his fanny and not go out of bounds.
That play was beautiful.
That was a good. We thought that would be the best game of the weekend. It turned out to be the best game of the weekend, to me anyway. And
The Buffalo Indy game was very interesting.
It was disappointing. It was interesting because Buffalo, I thought, laid an egg. Now, they end up winning the game, first playoff win in 25 years. But I got to tell you, you watch Josh Allen. You love what you see. This guy, they run him too much. He's too big. He's going to get hit. He never crouches. He never slides. They can't afford to lose him. They can't. That's a fundamental flaw with quarterbacks that run all the time. There's going to be one pop that they're going to get that's going to knock them out of the game. And that's got to be the biggest fear for Buffalo. They do not have to consistently run him. They have other weapons. They just do.
Maybe the weapon in Diggs, right?
Yeah.
That was a gorgeous touchdown pass that I thought, like, solidified. Like, all right, they've stabilized. They're now covering. Like, I thought we had the cover there after that touchdown. So give Indianapolis credit.
But we got the killer. We got the killer cover moment the second the lead went to what, Don? 11?
You just
knew the touchdown was coming to ruin the spread. You knew it. Now, I didn't think it would end with Indy having the ball and a real chance to come down and tie the game.
And how about laying an egg on that drive? They had a chance and he didn't do anything.
I felt so bad for the receiver who got back up and lost the ball again.
But can we really... I want to dive into, we talk about the analytics, right, which drive me crazy in baseball. In football, I can't deal, all right? Like I mentioned, them going for it on fourth down. They lost yardage on third down. They go for it on fourth. Kick the field goal. That's what I'm thinking. But the analytics apparently tell you it's better to go for it, right? But they don't take into account the gut punch when you don't get it. And then what happens? Buffalo gets the ball, marches right down the field and scores. Like, so... I'd like to know, talk to these analytic people, do you take into consideration what it does to your team when it fails? Like, you, in the rhythm of that game, I'm thinking, kick the field goal, especially when you lost yardage on third down. Like, they don't take into consideration, especially in football. Baseball might be one thing, although I do think there's emotion in baseball. But in football, that you know what that does to Buffalo when they stop on fourth down?
And I've heard that was one of the things that really wore Doug Peterson. There's an analytic guy in his ear constantly. Maybe he wants to get away from that. An analytic guy, go for it. I mean, they're the kings of going for it on fourth down because there's some analytic formula that go for it on fourth down because it's worth it, or go for the 2-point conversion because it's worth it. As Don said, well, how about the emotions of when you stopped?
I remember it might have been. It wasn't 60 minutes. It was probably, you know, it was some what's real sports on HBO, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and this is like a decade ago. I don't know if you guys remember it. They had like a high school coach that never punts. He doesn't believe in punting, right? Just and he gave you all these analytic formula on how it's better. You get the extra down, you get more time, and you can defense can come up with stops. All these like mumbo jumbo. Tell me, we're not heading towards that now? It seems like. I'm just going to go for it. And now I wonder if that takes the pressure off the coach now, too. Like, oh, I'm a renegade. Nobody ever faults them. Like, when Rivera went for two against the Giants, which we thought was ridiculous, what was everybody's response when we criticized Rivera? Well, that's Ron Rivera. He's a gunslinger.
You know, also, and if you go for it and it doesn't work, you say, well, the numbers told me to go for it. That's right, why Kevin Cash wasn't criticized that much. If he had just made a decision. I'm going to take out Snell now because I think he's going to... Well, now he had the numbers to back him up. So there's a good and a bad for managers and coaches. The numbers back up your move if it doesn't work.
Right, but if you're a renegade that just always goes for it, then it's almost like you're not held accountable when it happens because they'll just say, well, that's what he does. He's a crazy person. He just goes for it. Oh, well, I wasn't surprised Jeffrey Dahmer ate people. That's what he does.
I had a moment on Saturday. Do you guys remember when Washington was down 9-0? And finally got into scoring position, I was worried that if fourth down came up, he'd go for it. Rivera would go for it and risk putting no points on the board early in the game. And I just think you're right. You cannot risk coming away with nothing all the time.
Got to get points.
The other game that we have not talked about, Rams and the Seahawks, Rams' defense is so good. And if Aaron Donald can play, they can beat anybody. And I don't know if he's going to be able to play next week. They say he will be able to. They say Cooper Kupp is going to be able to play as well. Mm. That is just tendonitis in the knee. But Dan Orlovsky, you got to give him credit. He's been saying for the last 6 weeks, Seattle is not a good team.
No.
And they did not show up, and Jamal Adams was hurt. He's going to have, like, multiple surgeries. And the Seahawks never had a chance. I mean, that defense is suffocatingly great.
But I don't care how good your defense is. You should be able to walk in to Seattle and shut them down like that unless there's a Seattle issue. And I think we saw it down the stretch. They're not the same team. They're awful defensively. And Russell Wilson just did not have a great second half of the year. He just didn't.
It went from MVP to he might not get a vote.
No, he can't. I mean, you can make the case he's the reason. I mean, really, since the Giant game, the only thing he had was that Jet debacle. Otherwise, he has not been very good.
And you also got a clear illustration of what a diva wide receiver can do to hurt a team. So Metcalf was not getting anything going. I think they threw to him three times in the first 1.5 quarters or whatever.
Okay.
And he was screaming on the sidelines that they weren't targeting him, screaming. And it's an empty stadium, so everybody hears it.
Right. Right.
And then they try to force a ball to him, and a great defensive play by L.A., they just jump in, and it's a pick six because he's a diva wide receiver, and I don't think it's any coincidence that the Browns are a better team without Odell. I mean, you want great wide receivers, but great wide receivers that are not going to force their quarterback to throw the ball to them when it's not there.
Here's the thing, and we're even seeing it with the quarterback. I still think quarterback is the most important position in sports, don't get me wrong. Football's the ultimate team sport. This isn't basketball. I mean, no matter how good you are, and we've seen like MVPs get shut down, it can't just be about one guy. Everybody's got to do their job. Everybody's got to play well. You can't demand the ball like that. And it's no coincidence that you've seen teams, whether it was when, you know, Tiki and Shockey left Eli, and then when you see Odell with the leave in Cleveland, that it allows, especially a young quarterback like Baker Mayfield, to say, now I can do what I want to do. I don't have to feel like I got to get the ball to a certain area, that I got to make this guy happy. It's about winning, and the only way you win in football is when everything clicks. It can't just be one guy shooting the ball all the time. Everybody's got to be able to contribute.
Now
we saw that in Tennessee.
One quick aside. I sat down Charlie and Callie and had them watch the Nickelodeon broadcast of the Saints game. And I'll tell you what, it engaged them in a game that they're not that engaged in. Callie never watches sports. She sat on my lap and watched the entire first quarter. The slime
really?
Stuff, the young lady who was in the booth with Noah and Nate was brilliant, how good she was.
Gabrielle, yeah.
She was great. And even Lumpkin did a good job with his imitations and stuff. It was geared toward kids, but they didn't talk down to kids. They explained the game. I thought it was wonderfully done. And baseball should do something like that. They really should.
Lex
now, ESPN
Lumpkin.
has a Sunday Night Baseball, so it's a Disney thing. Let Disney put on a kids thing to explain baseball. You need stuff like that. That's forward thinking. And I thought that the one that made the broadcast was Nate Burleson, who I believe is one of the biggest stars in broadcasting. Tony Romo could get $18 million a year. If I'm signing anybody, I'm going to get Nate Burleson. This guy's a star. He bought in. He loved it. He did everything. The pregame show with SpongeBob SquarePants, he hosted that and was giddy about it. He's just a star, and I thought he made the whole thing go.
Wow, that's high praise for Nate Burleson, who I think is terrific, too. And by the way, him and Noah Eagle as a team, pretty good.
Boy, if you didn't know that was Noah Eagle, Don, was that Ian Eagle's voice, the inflection, the emotion, the way he called the game, that was Ian Eagle.
Well, it makes sense who his dad is. All right, we see it with Kenny.
There does Ballard know, by the way, Peter, that Noah is Ian's son? Does he know?
Well, my guess is Ballard did not watch the Nickelodeon broadcast, but history tells us he might not know that.
Well, I'm going to get Ballard off the hook. I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
NBC Sports tweeted out today, you know, their lineup for their broadcast because the NHL season starts on Wednesday. And nothing's official yet, but Kenny is going to work with Eddie. So, like, right now, at least early on, looks like, you know, Kenny Albert is going to get is right now with Eddie, who's the number one analyst. So they're looking on who they're going to replace Doc. They haven't decided yet, but right now Kenny's in a really good position. So I'm looking at the tweets, and I'm seeing what the reaction is. That's overwhelmingly positive because Kenny's better than his dad.
No.
But in the release, they mentioned that his dad is Marv Albert, and the shock by some people on Twitter who didn't know. So I'm wondering, Michael, is whether that's just like a New York thing. Because I was flabbergasted. I wanted to jump Ballard along with you as just sheer ignorance by Ballard. But you know what? The nation kind of agrees.
No,
there
are
a lot
sure,
of people
no.
that didn't know.
No, they're ignorant.
No, but
they're ignorant. It's a big part of Kenny's story. He's Marv Albert's son. He sounds like him.
But there is no Kenny story. It's not a story. It's not a story that's been told. They don't know the Kenny story. The story for Kenny Albert, if you're not a New Yorker, is, oh, that's one of the guys who does football on Fox. That's it.
Ridiculous.
That's the story.
The Jets just sent out a tweet that they have completed an interview with Aaron Glenn for the head coaching spot. I will take a timeout. We'll hear from Francisco Lindor, give you the latest on the LeMahieu situation. I made some phone calls over the weekend, so I have some information on that. Take more of your phone calls as well. We have not heard from Danny from Long Island. A little worried how he...
Someone check.
He handled this. It's troubling.
He may not be with us. Let's be honest.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. I heard he called up on the weekend and said that he might throw things on the lawn if it was 7-3 in the first quarter.
So it's 20.
Well, it was 7-3 after like 10 seconds. 7-0 after 10 seconds.
Correct.
We'll be back in just a moment right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. I hit you in the
nest. All right, so the Nets have a game tomorrow. The Nets have one tonight. That's why we're off at 6:30. And Kyrie Irving's not playing again. And there's been no statement whatsoever from Sean Marks, the GM, from Joe Tsai, the owner. Steve Nash is left holding the bag. And he was asked yesterday if the Nets lost another game without Kyrie Irving and said, you know, are you okay with the explanation? He goes, I'm just going to keep everything private. It's unbelievable.
Now, this can't be for what we speculated last week.
No, they're maybe saying it still is.
Maybe it's a contributing factor, but there has to be something else. Now, KD, after the game, said that he's got his back and his teammates have his back. So that's
what teammates say.
I understand that, but Michael, you have to be held accountable for that. So if it ends up being for something silly or frivolous, then... You know, KD doesn't look bad or his teammates don't look bad for having his back over something like that. So maybe what happened last week is a contributing factor, but that can't be the only reason. Again, why wouldn't you issue a statement saying that's the reason? He's missing multiple games here now.
Yeah, but what if the answer, you know, we say sometimes the answer is bad guy. What if sometimes the answer is just weird guy? Like, this just is what it is. He doesn't lead well. He doesn't relish that position, and he doesn't know how to do it. And, Don, it doesn't make any sense to any of us that you would care so deeply about this issue to the point that you can't play, but you wouldn't want to make a statement on it. It doesn't. It's inexplicable, basically. I'm not saying it's unforgivable, but it's inexplicable.
Well, you could tell. I'm just the way Nash is answering questions. I mean, they are at a crossroads. If you come down hard on the guy, you lose him. I mean, there's history that will happen. And if you continue to like just let it go, it's going. This is four games he's going to miss, and has nothing to do with health reasons, as far as we know.
And last night, KD dropped 29. It's not enough.
Yeah. At some point, it's going to catch up with you. But even if everything works itself out now, he comes back, starts playing well. This is going to be how it's always going to be as long as he's there. Like, what's going to make you go off the deep end the next time? What event's going to take place? Can I count on you day in and day out, or is this going to be something we're going to have to live with until we can't live with it anymore?
Now, remember the guy who called up on Friday demanding an apology from me because the Knicks were 5-3? So sure. Does he call back and, what was it, something from some guy from Staten Island? Does he call back now and apologize because the Knicks played two eggs?
Sure. I don't want to kill the Knicks over two bad games.
Okay, but I mean,
reality,
first of all...
It's a splash of reality, isn't it?
Oklahoma City Thunder are in a total rebuild, and you know, they beat the Nets last night, and they beat the Knicks over the weekend. Now, the Knicks are supposed to lose to Denver. Denver's really good.
But they got beaten pillar to post, Michael.
And they should have. But here's the thing that's going to be a big concern with the Knicks this year. They have inconsistent shooting. Now, even if they play good defense... I mean, R.J. Barrett could go 2-for-15 one game and like 7-for-10 the next game. You don't know what he's going to shoot. So there's no consistency whatsoever, and he's one of the guys that has to score for them. So, yeah, I want the Knicks to do well. I was excited when they were 5-3, but to call in the gall, the absolute gall for me to apologize because the Knicks are going to struggle this year. Okay, so how do you feel now?
This is an important question. Would you call it unmitigated gall?
I would say unmitigated gall.
If you played highlights of that call, yes, that would be a great way to describe it. The guy was a punk about it.
Well, the only gall that I really have time for is unmitigated.
Well, that's the only gall he should have.
Tonight, Michael, they're playing a Hornets team that's not bad. They're same record? Yeah, 5-5. And it's a pretty important game. You know, I mean, when you think about where they were and the emotion you had about them last week to laying two eggs over the weekend, you bounce back against a team that's definitely beatable. Let's see. Because to me, the difference is, if you want me to start believing that this Knicks team is in some way different and that Thibodeau has this building with a different energy in it, and this organization generally in a different place, they don't lay an egg tonight against a beatable team.
And LaMelo Ball is the youngest player ever to have a triple-double, so they're going to have to guard him, too. So it's interesting. It's going to be an interesting game, and we'll have it right here on 98.7. Our pregame starts at 6:30. Game time is at 7. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Chris in Huntington. Chris.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you, Chris?
I'm well, thank you. So, big-time Yankee fan, and I'm about to explode. If I hear one more Yankee fan say, well, why aren't we signing DJ? We signed Giancarlo Stanton. I'm going to flip out. That was a terrible signing on our part.
They traded.
The guy broke down. We don't have anyone in the stands right now to help us pay that salary off. And everyone's so hesitant as to why we're hesitant to give and throw this money at DJ like it's nothing. Okay, it was the worst trade, you know, that I can remember. So I'm furious that everyone's so, like, oh, yeah, let's just start him. No problem. We're in the middle of a pandemic here. Who knows how many people we're going to be able to fit in those seats next year? Who knows if this guy's going to break down? Yankees have to be cautious right now while we eat this money from the other bum.
Well, let's pump the brakes. I think you like Stanton when you couldn't get him out in the postseason last year. When everything he hit was over the wall.
I know, but...
That's a trade that will resonate for the net because that's going to dictate what they do. But the DJ LeMahieu stuff, that's not... I told you earlier about Lindor and why there was a hesitancy to acquire him because you'd have to sign him to a $300 million contract. And then Judge is up in 2 years. He'll be a free agent. You can't have four of those. Even the New York Yankees can't. The Dodgers can't. But that's not a contract that's on that level. Giancarlo Stanton is not affecting him, and really, because there's no fans in the stands, nobody's throwing a telethon for teams yet. They're okay. They're not making the money they used to. Some of them might actually be losing money. I understand the economic realities, but we're not going to have fans in the stands. We can't afford DJ LeMahieu. Stop.
I just think they're fiscally responsible.
Right, they're not going to bid against themselves. That's what it comes down to.
Man, listen, don't go off. It's not Stanton's fault, okay? And there are times where you really love having him. Let's not make it out to be that deal is awful because Stanton is awful. Yes, he's been hurt, but there are times he's a dominant player. That deal has really hurt them. And it's really it's crazy how it turned around. I mean, I was away with the Twins at the time, Peter, but I was listening. It was like, oh, my God, this team is going to be amazing, and they just rattle off championship. What a deal. God, there's been worse deals, but I never saw a deal go from 100 to zero as quick as that one did.
And that's just because he's been hurt. He can play. He's a good player when he's healthy, but he hasn't been healthy.
Listen, I'm a Cashman fan, okay? I'm the one that defends him. You defend him as well whenever the callers go nuts and say he should be fired. He's the worst general manager and all that. They got a little bit crazy getting him. That turned out to be a mistake. They thought because of with Judge and everything that they had that they were going to have this super team in Major League Baseball. And what they needed to be reminded of, that's not the way baseball works. Baseball's not basketball that way. You don't build super teams in baseball. There's a lot of things, that a lot of financial ramifications and health things that really kind of creep into play here that have really submarined that deal.
It's a
skeleton of what it originally was.
And you got a repeat talent because you have the same sort of talent in Judge. And they didn't know, I guess, that he wouldn't be able to play the outfield because of leg injuries. And it ties up the DH spot, which really is a problem for a manager. That's how you give guys half days off without taking them out of the lineup. But that is always going to be Stanton at the DH spot for the next 7 years.
But I believe no pandemic, no Stanton. I still think they're playing hardball with DJ. Remember, they played hardball with Jeter.
That's exactly what it was.
It's not that crazy.
Jeter wanted a lot of money. Brian Cashman said, that's an overreach. I'm offering you a three-year deal. And Jeter said, I want more. He said, you know what? Then go out and find an offer and bring it back to me, and then we'll address it. It's an overreach. And I think that Jeter doesn't like Brian to this day because of it. But Brian's got a job to do. Oh, he's protecting the interest of the organization.
Right. And then, but I think when it all is said and done, he is going to stay Yankee. But if he doesn't, it could get very messy. Not only from a PR standpoint, but also, even though it's still a very winnable division, Michael, I think they take a step back without him.
And can I tell you one thing, though? If an organization, now get close to the radio, everybody.
All right. Okay.
If an organization is willing to play hardball with Derek Sanderson Jeter, one of the most iconic players the organization's ever had, they were willing to play hardball with him. You don't think they're going to play hardball with DJ LeMay, who they love too? But again, it comes down to dollars and cents. Why are we bidding against ourselves? Bring us another offer. We made you an offer. You want something. Well, let's meet in the middle or bring us another offer.
I was going to say, I wouldn't even describe that as hardball. That's more like wiffle ball. I mean, that's just big boy business, right? Go. You want a fifth year, go see if you can get it someplace else and then get back to me. Hardball is we're not talking to you anymore. Get out of our face.
Hardball is either you accept our offer right now or you don't.
Or we're gone. You know, right. We got somebody else. We got somebody else in the wings. We're going to go and sign. But that's not the case. And I think he wants to be here. And they run the risk of maybe people getting upset. But you know, once he becomes a Yankee again, does Jeter not talking to Cashman affect Brian Cashman or the New York Yankees' way of doing business at all?
No, I think Brian's fine.
Yeah.
This portion of the Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. All right, we'll come back. We'll take some phone calls. We have ENN after that. It's Kayla Greco-Rosenberg and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.